I would like to call to order the Operations Committee for Friday, June 8, 2012. I'm going to ask, first off, if we can confirm our quorum.
Yes, I'll do the quorum now. Commissioner McKenzie, Commissioner Mullen, Commissioner Azambrato,
yep.
Commissioner Giacopini, Commissioner Green, Commissioner Haggerty, Commissioner Halstead, Commissioner Liccardo, Commissioner Spearing, Commissioner Tissier.
Here.
Commissioner Reinworth.
Here.
We do have a quorum.
Thank you very much. I would also like to mention that this meeting is being audio cast live on MTC's website. And also, if you might read for us the compensation announcement.
I'll do that now. Each member of the board here today will be entitled to receive $100 per meeting attended, up to a maximum of $500 per month per agency. This amount is provided as a result of convening a meeting for which each member is entitled to collect such amount. Thank
Great.
You.
Thank you very much. We are now to the consent calendar. I will mention I have several cards on item 3G, so if perhaps we could hear the speakers before we determine what to do on that particular item. So if we want to hold voting on the consent agenda until we have our speakers. Okay, 3E. Okay, we have some speakers. Okay, we have some on some of the other. Let me just see here.
Let me see on that for you.
Yeah, 3G. This is 3G. Okay, we'll go ahead and start. We have Dave Campbell. If you'd like to start, you have 2 minutes.
Dave Campbell, Program Director for the East Bay Bicycle Coalition. Here asking that the Bike to Work Day item 3G, be pulled from consent. And our request is to have it sent back to staff to have the proposal evaluated more and come up with better proposals to address the concerns that staff have shared with us as we've been working with them on this proposal. We coordinate Bike to Work Day with lots of groups throughout the Bay Area. The event works. It's successful. People are starting to ride bikes more and more all throughout the Bay Area. Counts on May 10th that just passed were way up. Areas that before weren't real bikey are starting to get in on biking and Bike to Work Day. Areas that have been more bike-friendly in years past, we're just seeing an explosion of cycling going on here in the Bay Area. This is so not the right time to stop funding Bike to Work Day. The regional bicycle plan approved by this commission many years ago says that MTC should be coordinating a very vigorous Bike to Work Day promotion. It's right there in the bike plan. So that's another reason it's frustrating for us to hear a recommendation to stop doing Bike to Work Day. We did a survey in Alameda County last year about Bike to Work Day, and what we learned is it does indeed work, not just for Bike to Work Day, but it works for cyclists who start to ride on Bike to Work Day. They continue to ride. 30% of the cyclists who start to ride on Bike to Work Day continue to ride year-round. That works, and that's partly why we're seeing such huge increases in cycling, particularly in the East Bay, where we do our bicycle advocacy work. And I've been doing this work for 17 years. When I ask cyclists, you know, how did you get started riding? The number one answer by far is I started on Bike to Work Day. That's what got me on my bike. The event works. It needs to be funded, and it needs to grow. You know, our request at this point is keep the funding where it's at, don't cut it, but it needs to grow. That's the long-term ask here. So please, send this back to staff. Encourage them to work with us to come up with a better solution. Thank you.
Thank you. Andy Thornley, followed by May Lee.
Good morning, Commissioners. Andy Thornley with the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition. Thanks for hearing this item. To follow on what Mr. Campbell just said, Regional Bike to Work Day, pretty big success for very small amount of money. $150,000 a year gets you a bulb out, one in San Francisco, or it gets you a whole region of promotion for bicycling. This is probably the region's most efficient TDM program. We are moving people out of cars and onto bikes, and in San Francisco, we've had really dramatic results from this. The San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency is developing some great data on this and hope to bring you that very soon to show not only that on the day it's quite effective, but it's sticky. As Mr. Campbell said, weeks later, folks who got on a bike for the first time are staying on that bike. We're getting folks on bikes $150,000 a year. I lose that much money in the cracks of my sofa. That's a little tiny piece of money. So we ask that you keep talking to staff about this and don't just sustain this at that very, very reasonable level, but let's grow it. It's a very small amount of money for a very good effect. So, again, please keep working with staff. We're happy to look for other ways to come at this, but let's keep talking about it. Thank you very much.
Okay. May Lee?
My name is Mai Lei, and I am the event director for the Bay Area Bicycle Coalition. I just did the 2012 event. I'm talking about the fundraising related to it. We increased our fundraising about 30% over between 2011 and 2012, and effectively this program asks us to increase our fundraising 200%. And as a fundraising professional, that is really amazing, and it would be fantastic if we were able to do that. What this elimination of this program in effectively 2015 would eliminate Bike to Work Day in small communities where biking is growing at a quick rate, such as Napa, Sonoma, and possibly Marin. Napa had increases of 34% in biking. That's amazing. And we would want to increase that and, of course, keep it for the region wide. So please consider continuing funding for Bike to Work Day. And as my colleagues, Thornley and Campbell, have said, please increase it going further on. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, that's the last card I have on that particular item. I have been asked by my colleague, Commissioner Liccardo, to pull item 3E. And I do have some speaker cards on that as well. No, you were welcome to ask questions on either one. Do you have a question on 3G?
I would love to hear the staff's perspective, and I'm also wondering if we couldn't rework this to encourage more fundraising, but also continue funding.
Pardon me, Commissioner. You know, I think it would probably be easier if you all want to talk about 3E and 3G just to pull them from the consent agenda now, and then we can have the discussion, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I'll move consent calendar removing items E and G.
Okay. That's fine.
Second that.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, why don't we go ahead? Should we go ahead and approve the rest of the consent items first and then go back to those? Okay, is there a motion to approve all the rest of the consent items? Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Well, we started with 3G, so why don't we go ahead and continue with
3G? Yeah, so if I could respond, Madam Chair. I think the source of the disagreement is not about next year's funding, which we propose to be at the same level as this year. So I'm not sure there's a reason to return this to staff for next year. I think the concern is about the following 2 years where we're proposing that it be reduced. And I think there is some confusion. We are not proposing that the funding for Bike to Work Day be reduced. We're suggesting, and we've got some evidence to suggest, that there are sponsorship opportunities that would allow this event to continue at its current level and grow, in fact, that would allow us to reduce the public funding for the event. So I think that's the question. And I don't think we're going to find that out until we try it. Now, if this is the wrong slope, if it's too fast, I think we're here to listen to you on that question. But I don't think there should be any misunderstanding that we would like this event to continue and grow. The question is, does it need to continue to have the same level of public funding, frankly, given its success at attracting sponsorship revenue?
Okay. Mr. Haggerty.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A question to Steve on this. First of all, I mean, you would probably think I'm one of the last people in the world that would probably be very interested in this program. And in fact, this last time, I rode with the ducks. No. Last time we had the bike to work, I actually participated at the urging of Dave Campbell, and I enjoyed it. It's something now that my kids, today is their last day of school, it's now something that I plan on doing because I don't have to drop them off anymore. I can now ride my bike to work. So I think what Dave was talking about is it does kind of spark an interest in other people to find a very clean way, alternative, healthy way to get to work. So having said all that, my question would be to you, Steve, is there a way that, you know, with you talking about, well, we think, you know, there's opportunities for the private sector to get involved, and I would say that the private sector has been involved because I was given a goodie bag of a bunch of stuff, and I think Cliff Bar, I think, is what I ate almost immediately, and you know, a lot of other stuff, and I know in my district at the BART station, Dublin Cyclery was involved, and so there is that participation, but I guess my question is there a way that we could maybe guarantee the level of funding, but if they don't need it, they don't take it? I realize that's kind of a weird question because somebody's always going to need it, right? But I'm just wondering if there's a way to work it out.
Commissioner, I'm sure there is. And I think probably the best way to proceed, if you're more comfortable with that, is just to approve the funding for 2013, which I don't think there's any disagreement about, and direct us to work with the Bike Coalition on some kind of plan that would try to test the market for whether sponsorship revenue can fill in some cracks here. The amount that we put in is not going to break the bank here, obviously. I will say, because this is a sole source contract, which is unusual for us, we're not allowed to use federal funds, which we would prefer to do. So we have to use our own TDA revenue, which is the most flexible money we have. So it you know, the 150 there, it matters a lot more than 150 from Uncle Sam, to be candid. But either way, it's not the end of the world. So if you be more comfortable with that approach, I think we could explore Commissioner Haggerty's suggestion and probably others to make sure that if we do tamp down on public funding, that there's some private revenue that takes place.
Okay, Commissioner Bates, then Commissioner Liccardo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm very happy with the approach that Steve has outlined. I think that's the right way to go. My concern has been that not so much with the urban counties, but more of the rural counties, more of the northern counties, that if there's a real opportunity that they will, you know, if they have to go out and raise the money, they may not be able to sustain the programs.
Mr. Liccardo.
Thank you. I certainly support the great work of the bike coalitions and throughout the Bay Area, but I'm also comfortable with the staff approach. One thing I would suggest is that we explore is if we are contemplating going back to, in future years, to the higher level of funding, the $150,000, that we consider adding to the work plan. You know, in my experience in Bike to Work Day, which is a great event, I love it, but basically it's a lot of volunteers out there, and I recognize that marketing entails some costs, but a lot of the marketing is also really done by public agencies like local transit agencies and the cities. They're out there pushing the program, and so there's a lot of free stuff involved, and it seems to me if we're going to be kicking in public money, we could probably be asking the Bike Coalition to be doing more as part of the work plan. So that's what I would ask for us to consider in future years.
Okay, it sounds like everybody seems comfortable with the idea, Steve, that at least from what I'm seeing, the nodding of the head, that we just take the first year. Would someone like to make a motion on that we just take the first year? Okay, we have a motion and a second to just look at the first year, send it back to staff, and talk about the second and third years. And I also would like to encourage, I think there's a lot of corporations out there that see the good work that you've done, and more people are riding to work and are just riding in general. So I think it would be a great combination to have some of these corporations kick in some dollars to make it even bigger, because we're talking about sustainability, and the more we have people on the bikes, the greater off we're going to be. So I would hope that you will work with us, and maybe we can come up with some ideas too, and we can get some others to join forces with some money. So. All right, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, seeing none, that passes. I was also asked to pull item 3E. Mr. Liccardo, you had some comments.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm concerned about the change orders, in particular particularly the change order for Cubic on the $625,000 for the AdFair machines. I'm just wondering to what extent, why didn't they see this coming? That's really the question. Why are we providing a change order for Cubic to essentially ensure that people are paying the fare and that we're collecting revenue, which I think is sort of the idea after all?
Commissioner, I'm going to try to abbreviate what is a very long story on this subject. And frankly, it's not just about Cubic. It's about us as well. We, in fact, had a dispute with BART originally over how we would deal with negative balances on their system. And we persuaded them that we ought to go forward with our current policy, which is that you can go negative on the BART system and exit the system. What that means is that once you, when you come back the next day, in theory, you have to restore your balance and that negative gets wiped away. What has been occurring, as you know, from the press stories is, frankly, fraudulent behavior. People who are defrauding primarily BART by taking advantage of that system, and we've got these disposable cars that Muni has for Clipper, and they're just throwing them away and taking long trips and getting them for free. BART had originally wanted their AdFair machines retrofitted with Clipper so that there would we would change the policy to what it currently is on BART, which is you can't leave the system
right
without paying full fare. So I think after quite a bit of experience with the subject, we're inclined to their view now and want to move forward with this change order to nip it in the bud that way.
And I understand under the Title VI item that's, I think, on might be on this consent agenda, we're already adding a $3 fee for the card itself.
Yeah, and we've experimented with different things there in terms of a card fee or a minimum load, and those have reduced the level of fraud, but they have not eliminated it. And we think it's a sufficient concern that we ought to eliminate it at the source, which is in the BART system by retrofitting the AdFair machines, and you go back to their prior policy, which says you don't leave the system unless you pay.
Okay. You know, I appreciate you being so candid, Steve. I guess my concern is these guys are consulting. They're in the private sector. They should know that they're absorbing risk in taking on these contracts. It just, I'm uncomfortable with the notion that we give them more money when things need to be fixed.
If I could just,
that we all could have.
And look, I don't want to sound like a shill for industry here, but I think Cubic in particular deserves a little more credit because we actually had a different contractor when we made this decision. It wasn't Cubic, it was their predecessor, ERG. You know, I think Cubic would have been more than willing to take the money then and do the improvement then. So I think it's probably some shame on them, but some shame on us as well as your staff.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. I do have one card on this. Mr. Scott, Eric Scott. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Eric P. Scott. Can you hear me? Okay. I want to speak to this issue with the add value machines. I have an RTC discount card. I also use the red tickets. While I understand and I appreciate Director Heminger's concerns here, I think that this is a non-issue for the customers who use personalized cards, such as the RTC discount card or AC Transit with the personalized youth cards. I believe this is also going to be a non-issue with registered cards because there's a built-in disincentive for people to discard something that has their name on it, and if it is abused, it's completely traceable. One of my biggest criticisms of the way Clipper has been implemented is that it has not followed closely the policies applied to the legacy fare media. All this is one where I would like to actually see a change. If I use AdFare with a discounted ticket, I am charged the non-discounted upgrade price. And my hope is that if this is implemented, that the policy is going to be that you get to keep the regular discount schedule. My concern here is that a customer may not be able to just pay the difference. I had an incident last month where I had a red card go bad. And it's only the third time in my life that I've had the magnetic fare media fail. It's been very reliable for me. And the BART station agent said that while they can give single-use passes to people with the blue tickets, their policy precludes them from doing the same for someone with a discounted fare. And then my only option was to go to a BART ticket vending machine and put cash value on my Clipper card. The price of a ride from this station, like Merritt to San Francisco, is $1.30. But a BART ticket vendor will not sell you $1.30. There's a minimum load of $2 on it. And my hope is that the same policy is not carried over to AdFare.
Thank you, sir. Okay, what is the pleasure of the commission on item 3E?
Madam Chair, I'll move the Clipper program contract actions, all four items, and I certainly understand Commissioner Liccardo's frustration on the cubic. You think there would have been some awareness of this, and I think we've struggled through it. So with that, I move all four items.
Okay.
I will go ahead and second it, understanding the condition we handed this program to cubic.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that item passes. We are now on to item number 4, which is the program for arterial system synchronization. Yes. Good morning.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Danielle Stanislaus, and I'm the Senior Program Manager for the Freeway Performance Initiative and Regional Arterial Operations Program. Hopefully you all have the revised version of the printed request for committee approval sheet that now references the correct attachment, and you also have the yellow attachment, which is a press release that we issued back in February. I'm here today to request approval for the third cycle of projects for the Program for Arterial System Synchronization and the corresponding consultant amendments. The Program for Arterial System Synchronization, or PASS, provides technical and financial assistance to local Bay Area jurisdictions to improve the safety and efficiency of traffic signal systems in select corridors. As a part of the larger freeway performance initiative that was funded out of T2035, PASS focuses its annual $1.2 million in CMAC funds on traffic signal coordination on arterials of regional significance. Signal coordination, which ensures that vehicles don't randomly stop at red lights, but rather continue to move through a corridor at a constant speed, has been recognized as an important strategy to reduce delays and increase air quality and safety for motorists. Grants awarded in the form of technical assistance are focused on projects that retime signal systems in response to changes to the state-owned system. Projects that establish and maintain communications between state and locally owned signals, and projects that retime signal systems to support priority for transit vehicles and other regional programs. But before getting into the details of the proposed third cycle of projects, I'd like to take a moment to report back to you all on the significant benefits that have been achieved from the first cycle of projects, which were implemented last year. We are currently wrapping up another 21 projects as a part of the second cycle of the PASS, and we expect to see significant benefits similar to those that we achieved in the first cycle. We've distributed the press release that MTC issued earlier this year, which highlights the benefits achieved by this first cycle of projects. We also put together these fact sheets, and you guys have a summary fact sheet book, for the local jurisdiction so that they could have a quick summary document for the public and their local decision makers. As you can see from the summary included in the press release and that you can find on the first page of your fact sheet books, this first cycle of the PASS, which included 13 projects from 7 counties for a total of 339 signals, reduced travel time for autos by 18% or more than 3.8 million hours. It reduced travel time for transit by 7% or almost 48,000 hours. It reduced emissions by 8% or over 700 tons. And yielded a fuel consumption savings of 14% or over 9.8 million gallons. Before and after travel time runs are conducted in the field on autos and actually on the actual transit vehicles that travel these routes to assess the impacts that these projects have on mobility for each of the past projects. But PASS doesn't stop there. PASS is multimodal and seeks to improve the safety and mobility for bicyclists and pedestrians as well. And thus, you can also find summary information on the back of each fact sheet about the changes that we made for bikes and pedestrians. Bike and ped counts are taken as a part of every single project, and minimum green times are increased to promote safe crossing for bicyclists. Pedestrian safety is enhanced by retiming walk signals to accommodate pedestrians traveling at a slower walking speed. PASS also implements greater clearance time at intersections that are near schools or near senior citizen centers so as to improve safety for seniors and children. The total benefits assumed over the five-year life of these projects are included in the first cycle. They're valued at over $100 million. And since the total costs for the PASS project are only around $1.25 million, this yields an overall benefit-cost ratio of 80 to 1. That's quite a return on investment. This significant improvement is due in large part to the fact that most of these corridors have never been coordinated before due to the inability of the local signals to communicate effectively with the state-owned signals. But since we partner with Caltrans as a part of this program, both in scoping and in the implementation of these projects, PASS is able to look at corridors more holistically and independent of who owns the signals, be it the local cities, the counties, or the state. PASS enables cities with limited funding and limited staff resources to improve the safety and operations of their arterial networks across jurisdictional boundaries and across modes. It is for these reasons that PASS was selected as a finalist for the California Transportation Foundation's Operational Efficiency Program of the Year Award for 2011. As you can see from the listing of proposed projects in the fiscal year 12-13 table shown on table one of your memo, PASS also provides vital support for other regional initiatives, such as the Transit Performance Initiative, Safe Routes to Schools, Complete Streets, Transit Signal Priority, and Incident Management, among others. Many people think about signal coordination and they get concerned. They think it automatically means faster cars and therefore decreased safety for the other modes. The Arterial Operations Committee, which is comprised of local traffic engineers and transportation planners from Bay Area jurisdictions, is trying to shift the way we think about arterial operations and signal coordination to understand that this is an important tool that can be used to implement larger policy directives, such as increasing the pedestrian clearance time near schools, implementing transit signal priority, or emergency vehicle preemption. Priority can be given to any mode, but in the end, it will need to be implemented through the effective use of the arterial ITS infrastructure. Moreover, PASS lays the foundation for successful deployment of specialized signal timing plans, as evidenced by the Cupertino project, which is necessary to support VTA's Line 323 limited bus service project included as a part of the TPI. In fact, through the implementation of the PASS projects to date, we've learned an important lesson about how most of the equipment out in the field is old, and in many cases, the cities aren't even aware of what the equipment is, much less how it functions. This is why we started an inventory of this equipment, and we are proposing to continue this effort to really document and upgrade the ITS infrastructure in the future. As I mentioned earlier, PASS provides financial and technical assistance to the local jurisdictions, meaning that we actually award the grants in the form of consultant assistance. PASS has used the three firms of Kimley Horn Associates, TJKM Transportation Consultants, and URS Corporation for the first two cycles of the program. We have the option to extend the contracts with these firms for one additional year, and staff have conducted performance evaluation surveys with all the participating local agencies to date and have found the consultants' performance to be satisfactory. Staff therefore recommends that this committee authorize the executive director to negotiate and enter into contract amendments with the three consulting firms as listed in page two of the memo, and as well as the 17 projects that are listed in table one for the fiscal year 12-13 cycle of the PASS. Thank you, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them at this time.
Any questions for Danielle? Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion passes. Thank you very much. Great report. We're moving on to item number five, which is the final Title VI summary report on Clipper. Melanie?
Good morning. Well, Jacob Avedon and Denise Rodriguez will be giving a PowerPoint presentation on this item.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Denise Rodriguez, a contract compliance manager here at MTC, and I'll be giving an overview of the Clipper final Title VI report and proposed changes to the operating rules. First, I'd like to go through just a brief timeline. In February 2010, MTC adopted Resolution 3866, which required transition to Clipper only. On April 10, 2010, MTC began the Title VI analysis of the FAIR media transitions to Clipper of 30 FAIR products sold by 5 agencies. Throughout that process, MTC worked very closely with the operators where those changes were being implemented. September 2011, the draft Title VI summary report was released to the MTC Operations Committee and was also released to the public for comment. That draft report included the analysis for those first 5 agencies, transit operators. In October 2011, MTC adopted Resolution 3866 revised, which made some changes to the resolution, changes to the Clipper implementation program. From October through December 2011, MTC went into the public engagement regarding the draft Title VI summary report, and I'll go into that in a little more detail in just a couple slides. In winter of 2011, MTC completed the SamTrans and VTA Title VI analysis. In April of this year, MTC then finalized or made the draft final FTA, or pardon me, getting ahead of myself. In April 2010, MTC received our FTA Title VI compliance review. Part of that compliance review included or noted that fair equity analysis related to Clipper was an area where MTC was deficient. But our efforts in related to the analysis done to Clipper, we feel, is moving us forward to closing out that corrective action. That brings us to today, and where we're presenting this item to you all, the final Title VI summary report, which is included in your packet. Just to note, the final Title VI summary report includes analysis for VTA and SamTrans, and all changes from the draft report to the final report are noted in a final report supplement. It's in a different font, so it's very easy to see the changes from the draft to the final. Moving forward, we would like to get your approval to submit the final Title VI summary report and the recommended changes to the operating rules to the MTC Commission on June 27th of this month. And as proposed in the final report and change to the operating rules, we'd like to move forward with reinstatement of a $3 card acquisition fee beginning on September 1st of this year. So, just in brief, the analysis found potential disparate impacts related to some of the FAIR products. For the initial phase, there were found to be no potential disparate impacts for 24 of the 30 FAIR products at AC Transit, BART, Caltrain, Golden Gate, and Ferry, and SFMTA. Areas where the analysis found potential disparate impacts were Clipper retail locations, the proposed reinstatement of the $5 card acquisition fee, distribution of special discount fare cards, youth cards, and customer outreach. The second phase, which include VTA and SamTrans, found no potential disparate impacts for 7 of the 10 fare products. And areas where that analysis found potential disparate impacts, again, were the Clipper retail locations and distribution of special discount fare cards, this time youth and senior. Again, just talking about the public engagement, after development of the draft report, MTC proceeded with an in-depth public engagement that included 12 focus groups in 7 cities, posting the draft final summary report on our website and getting input that way, and then also posting the SamTrans and VTA specific analysis on our website and getting public input that way. The next two slides given just an overview of the feedback and the planned mitigations, and those are also detailed in your memo. In addition to the in addition to our recommendation to move forward to submit the final report to the commission. We are also proposing changes to the Clipper operating rules. And I think the two that I'll just point out there are lowering the adult card acquisition fee to $3. It was $5. That's been waived, and it will be lowered to $3 based on the analysis. And then the last thing there is combining. There were two separate, a $5 card replacement fee and a balance restoration fee for a total of $10. And we're going to combine that into a single $5 replacement balance restoration fee so that people would pay no more than $5. That's also based on public input. So just next steps, based on key findings and actions, the analysis found potential disparate impacts, which I've gone over. The mitigation activities address the range of disparate impacts, and we've already begun implementation of some of these mitigation activities. And we plan to, with your approval and with commission approval, reinstate the car fee at $3 on September 1st of this year. Additional next steps would be launching a revised youth and senior card application process, which would include mail and email in process, simplification and reduction of the card balance replacement fee, which I just mentioned, that was one of the changes to the operating rules, distribution of free Clipper cards through CBOs, monitoring of the Clipper retail network so that we make sure we always have a sort of a base number in areas where we feel it's extremely vital, and availability of Clipper information at MTC-sponsored events. So based on this, staff recommends that your committee refer the final Title VI summary report, Clipper Fair Media Transitions, to the MTC Commission with a request to direct staff to submit the final summary report to FTA and to implement changes to the Clipper program in a manner consistent with the report, and also to refer the revised Clipper operating rules, MTC Resolution 3983, revised, to the Commission for adoption. Thank you.
Thank you. Any comments or questions? I do have a speaker card. Mr. Lepardo, did you have a...
Thank you. Just one question. Display my ignorance of the public education system. Do all public schools issue photo ID cards to students? I'm trying to understand if all kids are going to be able to show ID here.
Jacob Avedon, MTC staff with the Clipper Project. Over the years, we've reached out to school districts all across the region, and my understanding from our outreach is that they have disparate policies with respect to identification cards and the information that's presented on the identification cards. So what we are trying to do in coordination with our transit agency partners is for those school identification cards that do have the requisite information, especially the date of birth, to allow that type of identification as proof of eligibility for a youth card. But where it doesn't show proof of age, then it's insufficient for proving eligibility for the youth Clipper card.
I guess I would ask us to explore the possibility of considering consulate cards, recognizing there may be a lot of public schools that don't issue these cards, and it may be very difficult for some families to be able to get legal identification for their children otherwise. I hope that's being considered.
Our policies already include a range of types of identification, which does include consulate cards already.
Great.
So there's a range, and the discussion of school ID cards is an expansion to the range of existing forms of ID that are accepted.
Great. Thank you very much.
Okay, Eric Scott.
Well, again, wow, I've got a lot. First of all, I support the plans to redo the application process. It's particularly difficult for people who are using the discount fare products. I'm involved with a number of groups that have meetings and training in different cities. So we have people who don't reside in the Bay Area, but they come to the Bay Area on a regular basis, almost always by air, who need to get cards. And it's very difficult. Someone who lands at SFO can go to an information desk, get a green BART ticket, but they can't get a senior card on the site, whereas other places such as Los Angeles will allow you to apply by mail. It's the same as getting a passport. Sorry here. The report left out issues with several of Muni's fare products. There is nothing in here which deals with things like Muni's Lifeline Pass and its possible transition to Clipper. I've spoken before with the committee before about the pilot pass, which Muni declined to transition to Clipper, citing the cost of a change order being in the hundreds of thousands of dollars as the justification, even though this product is substantially similar to the existing products and require a minimum amount of technical effort. This is very different than something like the VTA day pass accumulator, which is unique in the system. There was also something in the report that was talking about issues with transfers between systems that accept Clippers, such as VTA, and systems that don't, such as the Highway 17 bus. And I would like to see something perhaps akin to what's done in New York City, where there is a transfer machine at San Jose Diridon where you tap your card, it would notice that you had boarded VTA within the past 2 hours, issue some form of paper transfer, and note that it had done that so that it will not issue multiples. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Scott. Okay, I'm going to bring this back to the board. What is the pleasure of the commission? Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, seeing none, that item passes. We're now on to item number 6, which is the SAFE budget. Mr. Maldonado?
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Jaime Maldonado with the SAFE program. I'll be presenting the SAFE budget today. I'll be very brief, as it's all good news. SAFE operating revenues have held steady for many years now. Our operating expenditures have decreased for 3 years running, mostly due to lower FSB towing and call box maintenance expenses that are a result of the current competitive bidding environment. At the close of FY 2012-13, the fund balance for SAFE will have approximately $12 million, of which approximately 50% is cash or cash equivalent. Staff recommends that this committee refer MTC SAFE Resolution Number 57 to the authority for approval. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Is there anybody that's unhappy that we're doing good work? If not, is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor? Any opposed? Okay, hearing and seeing none, that item is approved. Item number 7 is public comment or other business. I see no one running forward, so this meeting is adjourned. Our next meeting will be July 13th at 10 a.m. We surprised all of you with nothing.